A new sound for 1950 resounds throughout the world. A symbol of hope. A call to arms. Hear it. Recognize it. Keep it ringing. It's the Freedom Bell. Ho, rider, why so urgent? If you be on honest business, stop. Give your name. Give your destination.
Name's Revere, friend. Paul Revere. Destination? Destination Freedom. America is more than a plot of land. It is a way of life, clean and decent, based on faith in God and man. Any man on earth who professes God and respects the dignity of man is a true American. And until all such men are free to speak, work, raise families, and worship their God as they see fit, no other American is truly free.
That was the spirit of Paul Revere, portrayed by Maurice D. Copeland on the new radio series titled Destination Freedom, presented by station WMAQ in the interest of human freedom the world over. Paul Revere is the symbol of warning, ready to ride down the skies to shout an alarm. His destination, now and forever, freedom.
Aye, freedom, my friend.
Paul Revere. You're actually here.
Aye, my friend. To talk about freedom. We fought for it in my time. Bloody battle after bloody battle. Now I've shaken loose the sands of time to ride the wind across the land to proclaim an old fact. God grants liberty only to those who love it and are always ready to guard and defend it. An old fact. Little remembered.
On the contrary. It's a very familiar quotation, repeated by most anyone.
Aye, there's the trouble. A way of life has become a quotation. In my day, we fought for freedom. We won it, too. And after the battles, we fought in earnest to keep it. Can you say the same?
Why, yes. This generation and the generation before it fought for freedom. Surely you know that, Paul Revere. Two world conflicts to preserve human rights.
But what of the peace? One failed, else why fight twice? There is no peace today. When will it come?
We work toward peace, world peace, the union of all nations.
That is good. I agree with such an aim. But remember, my friend, I've been watching. Been watching for close on 200 years. Never could retire. Kept my horse ready, grazing in the heavenly pastures. Can't spend all eternity working my craft on the Golden Gate.
Ah, yes, I remember. You were a goldsmith, Revere.
Goldsmith? Silversmith? Coppersmith, yes. And good at my trade. But to the point, friend, to the point. Yes, I've been watching you. I've seen a few things that are good. Later additions to the freedom I fought for. Your United Nations. Ah, wonderful conception. You see, I've been watching the world, not our America alone. I know about oppression. About the limitations of human rights which exist over the world. And when I look back to America, I see it's time for me to ride again. Oh, freedom exists here. Some enjoy it and realize its value. Many others still seek it, even here in the land which symbolizes freedom to the world.
Why do you come here to warn Americans? Surely it's the oppressed people in other nations who need your warning and your encouragement. We have freedom here.
Aha. But do you have freedom? How do you know you have it? Do you work to keep it and to help others get it?
You spoke yourself of the United Nations.
Yes. Yes, but you. What are you doing? Do you know how much freedom you have? That's enough, you see, because if you know, then in times of crisis, war, or peace, you'll fight to keep that freedom. You'll make any sacrifice. Even your life to preserve a free man's way of life. Tom Paine knew, and so did others, but you don't know, most of you. You don't know. Tell me, friend, when you think of people who fought for human rights, what names come into your mind? Perhaps they can help me convince you.
Why, Thomas Paine, Abraham Lincoln, Ben Franklin, Susan B. Anthony. Do you mean just Americans?
No. The fight for human rights is old. America is new. What about Plato? What about Voltaire?
Oui, monsieur. Voltaire. Surely there's a place for me in your discussion of human rights.
Monsieur Voltaire.
Aye. Here is the spirit of a man who knows about freedom and oppression, about the struggle for human rights.
Vraiment, I tell you, monsieur, when I was alive, sometimes I scarcely dared to walk the streets of Paris for fear my enemies would have me arrested without reason and I would disappear. I spoke out of turn in my day, yes. It took great courage then. But today, my free speech would seem tame by comparison with a modern newspaper. No one would pay any attention to an old-fashioned character like me.
But the fire of a genius like yours, Monsieur Voltaire, is immortal.
Merci, vous êtes très gentil. And yet, my peculiar fire burned for my day. I would have a different sort of fire now. I would try to influence not just Paris or New York, but by use of the radio, the airplane with its, what is your word, supersonic speed, I would take your freedom, which is partly my freedom, since I help work for it, and make that freedom real wherever in the world there is a living individual. I would be a sort of, a press agent for freedom.
You wear your years well, Monsieur Voltaire. You seem to bear no scars from even the Paris of the 18th century.
No? Oh, come back with me a moment, monsieur. See what happened to a neighbor of mine. The real scars are in the memory. This was before the revolution, remember, when the tyranny of a false aristocracy made personal freedom dependent on the whim of those in power. One day, as I was writing in my study,
Monsieur Voltaire, let me in. It is Madame
Villard. Eh bien, come in, madame. The door is not locked. Oh, what is it, madame? Oh, sacre bleu, what is the matter with your arm?
Oh, it is broken, but it is of no matter. I was fortunate to get away from those brutes.
Get away from the... From whom, madame?
You know that my husband and I have not been getting on so well. He is ambitious and unscrupulous.
Oui.
To get rid of me and our children, he went to the king himself.
Oh.
He had my youngest son declared insane. Pierre, the most brilliant boy in Paris. My eldest in prison, dear Jean, who would harm no one. Oh. And he tried to have me, his wife, spirited away. Le bon Dieu knows where. Oh, hide me, please.
But of course I will hide you. First, I will lock the door.
They brought a letter de cachet an hour ago. A piece of paper signed by the King of France and countersigned by his minister with the royal seal.
Oh.
My husband pinioned me against the wall, and the gendarmes took my children away. As they were dragging me down the stairs, I broke away, even though my arm was half twisted off in the struggle. But I don't care about myself, monsieur. What will become of my little ones?
Now you must have courage, madame.
No. With this letter de cachet direct from His Majesty, there is no chance of a trial, no defense. There is nothing that can be done against this silent weapon.
Oh.
To think, Monsieur Voltaire, my own husband, conspiring with the king against his family. And I am not the first to suffer, nor shall I be the last. Does a human being have no rights?
Can you imagine such a scene happening today?
Aye, we've come far. Yet it could happen again. In some countries it is happening. Human rights have no place under a communist regime.
True. And a few years ago, the Nazis and Fascists were guilty of exactly that sort of injustice.
Ah, but where are they today? They have been on trial as the greatest criminals the world has ever seen. and are being punished thanks to world public opinion. Oh, your generation, monsieur, rather universally admits the right to personal liberty. It was strange to us. It is a commonplace to you. Oh, what a pleasure to go out in the streets and feel that you are safe, protected by laws which the people themselves have put into effect. It is like the France, like the world that I dreamed of, but never saw in my own lifetime. Oh, monsieur, only think of voting for the kind of government you want.
Aha, the right to vote. That concerns me.
Most certainly it concerns you, sir. It concerns anyone who could write as you did on the Republic.
Why, it's Plato.
Who else? Wherever there's free discussion of ideas, I will be present. I might say it was my idea originally.
And which of our human rights impresses you most, Plato?
The right to vote. And I'm already familiar with that procedure to some extent. Surely you know that in the Greece of my time, and later in Italy, the right to vote was well known.
As long ago as that?
Yes. In the primitive days, it was customary for the heads of government to ask for opinion from their people on matters that vitally concerned them. It was done in this way.
It is proposed that a new system of providing water direct to the homes of Athenians be put into immediate effect. This will necessitate added taxes. What is the will of the people? Those opposed will indicate by striking their shields. Those in favor of the measure, by a shout.
Later, with the development of democracy in Greece, the taking of votes was effected in the form of a poll with a show of hands. In the cases of questions affecting the status of individuals or lawsuits and proposals of ostracism, these were determined by secret ballot. At first, it was done by the use of pebbles. But in my day, this secret ballot was a slip of wood covered with wax.
Then our right to vote is also not such a modern thing as we like to think.
Not modern, perhaps, but even more precious than you recognize.
Human rights, my friend, have been the goal of man since the beginning of time. Freedom, like happiness or life, is not a static thing. It must be fought for, in free discussion preferably, and clung to passionately. As your American saying has it, eternal vigilance is the price of liberty. History, my friend, is full of cycles of freedom and tyranny, but always freedom must be the ultimate victor. And as the Roman Cicero said, freedom suppressed and again regained bites with keener fangs than freedom never endangered.
It seems strange to hear you speak like this, Plato. I thought you were more interested in philosophy than in action.
Oh, there must be a conception, a philosophy, before there's action. First the dream, then the reality. And besides, my friends in the sacred groves of Parnassus agree that I can perhaps argue as well or better than any of them, but my friend Diogenes almost got here instead of me.
Diogenes? Is he still looking for an honest man? Surely he has found one where he is.
He has been given a great star for a lantern, and he goes through the spheres, still looking in limbo. I don't know if his search is over.
I never knew that Diogenes was interested in human rights.
Oh, yes. Have you never heard his famous saying? The most beautiful thing in the world is freedom of speech. We of the ancient world, centuries ago, dreamed even then of what your day takes as a matter of course.
I think we do appreciate our rights. We know that the freedom which we have attained has not been easy.
Let me speak. I've listened too long to this ridiculous nonsense. When I was royal governor of the colony of Virginia, such talk would be cut short with a good stout rope about the traitors' necks.
How did you get here, Barclay?
Governor Barclay, if you please, Revere. I tell you, things have changed. This wild talk of human rights, it's deplorable. Some few humans have unlimited rights, and the majority have only those which it pleases their superiors to grant.
You know this wheezing, imbecile American? No, of course you don't. He was even before my time. Governor of the Virginia colony for 30-odd years back in the 1600s. He had a liking for executing colonists and a horror of schools and newspapers.
I said it in 1671 and I repeat it fervently in 1950. Learning has brought heresy and disobedience into the world, and printing has divulged them. Can you deny that I was right? Just see where it's put you, rebel.
Yes, I see. And I'm beginning to see better how tremendous a struggle we made to get here. A struggle against your kind.
My kind, yes. The aristocracy. Superior in even their blood and bones. You have no aristocracy.
No, thank God.
Go away, Governor. Even your own countrymen have no use for bigots like you in 1950.
I had no use for bigots like him a century and a half ago, and I was born an Englishman.
Tom Paine.
Oh, you recognize me. Well, then perhaps you remember my battle cry. Tyranny, like hell, has never been easily conquered. Yet we have this consolation within us, that the harder the conflict, the more glorious the triumph. What we obtain too cheap, we esteem too lightly. It would be strange indeed if so celestial an article as freedom should not be highly rated.
I like your adjective, celestial.
You should see our heavenly trophy room. We have freedom under glass in the most honored place.
Aye, there's my grievance. Most Americans of 1950 don't honor freedom. They simply use it. It's an everyday commonplace to them, like electricity.
What's that? Thunder?
No, that's just old Ben Franklin. Ben must have heard Revere say electricity. He's still experimenting, you know. Such a racket as he keeps up, playing around with thunderbolts.
I heard you, Tom Paine. And I came to speak of human rights, not electricity. Though how you can take either one for granted is more than I can understand. Let me say to you, my modern compatriot, that while tyranny exists anywhere in the world, you cannot take freedom for granted. And let me remind you as I go that it's a long struggle, but one most eminently worth the fighting.
Must he go so soon?
Yes. There's been some argument about his right to be present at a discussion of human rights. In a way, that kite of his, you know, made possible your atomic bomb. It's nice to be trillions of miles away from that, I can tell you.
Yes, in your own words, Tom Paine, these are times like your own to try men's souls.
Do you know what they call me, sir? The perpetual rebel. Once I said, where liberty is not, there is my home. I meant that where inequality and oppression crushed my fellow humans, there I would make my temporary home and fight on the side of liberty. Well, now I've done with fighting, but you haven't. Remember that. Remember that, sir.
The women of the present haven't done with fighting either. Just keep this in mind. Let there be no nonsense in your plans for the rights of women as well as of men.
Good of you to come, Mrs. Anthony, or is it Miss Anthony?
Never you mind, Paul Revere. A single woman has the same rights as a married woman. Call me Susan. Yes, gentlemen. We women have finally got our foot in the door of freedom after humiliation, imprisonment, and public neglect. In 1950, woman, like atomic energy, is here to stay. Nobody can deny that any longer. In fact, it was a woman who helped to discover atomic energy.
A suffragette is certainly welcome here, Susan.
You are amused at my wearing trousers. Well, I'll admit it is a bit old-fashioned. They should be slacks. Dear me, I wish I had a gavel. Sometimes I can hardly think without one.
By all means, a gavel. Here you are.
Now then, this is much better. I have only one complaint to make, gentlemen. It took a war in this country to earn the right to vote. It took woman's record in World War I to break down the barriers of opposition. And just look at the record for World War II. And speaking of wars, it took the war between the states to get us started at all. I personally tried to have women included when the franchise was granted to Negroes. But women were still slaves, so to speak, in spite of the war between the states.
The war between the states concerns me.
Mr. Lincoln. Gentlemen, goodbye. I bow to presidential authority. But I shall be present at each session of the Commission on Human Rights. You may expect me without fail.
Goodbye, Susan B. Anthony. And you may keep the gavel.
Welcome, Mr. Lincoln.
I was expecting you. Thank you, Mr. Revere. My principal reason for coming to this discussion was to remind world citizens of the present that what I said about a house divided not standing must apply to them. Always. Since the world has shrunk, we may think of all peoples as being married, as I hoped in my lifetime to see the states of my own country. I said then that though a man and woman may be divorced and go away to live apart from one another, the states could not. And I say today that one country cannot be divorced and live apart from another. This marriage of the world, this union, must work through mutual sympathies and cooperation and through the recognition of basic human rights for everyone.
I sincerely believe that our United Nations know that there must be real union of effort to secure world peace and human rights for member nations.
Well, they might know it by now.
You know, Mr. Revere, it is gratifying to see that the peoples of the world can at long last sit at the conference table and peacefully discuss the qualities that make one nation similar to another and one nation different from another, and yet all entitled to a certain inalienable right. It is vital that the question of liberty and human rights be always before the people in this world you live in. There is always danger of losing one's liberty.
Well, that's why we are here, Mr. Lincoln.
Yes, the poet Milton said that unless that liberty which is of such a kind as arms can neither procure nor take away, which alone is the fruit of piety, of justice, of temperance, of unadulterated virtue, unless that liberty shall have taken deep root in your minds and hearts, there will not be long wanting one who will snatch away from you by treachery what you have acquired in blood. This is a question, gentlemen, which has puzzled idealistic men throughout all history.
Aye. Milton knew. He knew.
It is only when a man loses a valuable possession that he begins truly to evaluate it. Foresight has always been more difficult to achieve than hindsight. The important thing is to keep constantly aware of the words and deeds of the men in the past who have enabled you today to seek the true definitions of liberty and human rights for your own time, and to lay as good a foundation for future generations as has been laid for the work you are doing in 1950.
Now, do you see? Do you understand, American of 1950, why I'm concerned? Want to warn you of the peril to your freedom?
I do. And yet, Revere, don't you think that we in 1950 are aware of our enemies?
Aware? Perhaps. But the enemies of human rights wear many masks, take many forms, like evil. I'm restless in this era you live in. There is peace, and yet no peace. There is freedom, but many are not free. If only you'll hew to the line set forth by men who blaze the trail of democracy and human liberty.
You have made me realize that we do need to be reminded again and again of what we have, and the example set by those who have gone before, their sacrifices, and their uncompromising integrity.
Of all the spirits who have spoken today, I am the symbol to reckon with, for I was the man who once awakened America to impending danger. The danger in 1950 is as intangible as my own spirit, yet it is very real. Heed my warning. Learn from the experiences of those who established the guideposts which lead to freedom. There are stories we need to remember today, stories which show that freedom is not license, that freedom entails action as well as philosophy. Until we remember, before we lose our heritage. May God grant that the torch of freedom may burn eternally and ever brighter, till darkness is gone from the world.
Oui, Monsieur Riviere. The prayer of the human heart is important.
Monsieur Voltaire, back again?
Oui, monsieur. You may well be surprised that the man who is called an agnostic was recalled by a prayer. But perhaps you did not know that 2 centuries ago, I composed a prayer myself, a sincere one, which might well have been written for your world of the present.
Will you repeat it for us?
Willingly. That is why I returned. I should like, most of all, to be remembered for this. O God of all creatures, of all worlds, and of all ages, thou hast not given us hearts so that we may hate one another, and hands that we may slay one another. Grant that the trifling differences in the clothes with which we cover our frail bodies, in the inadequate tongues we speak, in our absurd customs, in our imperfect laws, in our meaningless convictions, grant that all these trifling distinctions, which appear so vastly important to us and are so insignificant in thine eyes, grant that these differences may not become tokens of hatred and persecution. Grant that men may learn to abominate and outlaw tyranny over souls, as they abominate and outlaw robbery and violence. Grant that we may not hate and tear one another in the midst of peace, but that we may employ our existence in 1,000 tongues, yet in 1 united feeling, in praising thy goodness, which has given us the brief moment we call life.
Aye, my stories are about freedom. And I've shaken loose the dust of time to ride the wind across the land telling my stories. To proclaim an old fact. God grants liberty only to those who love it and are always ready to guard and defend it. Listen to my stories. Heed my warning. Make your destination freedom.
You have just heard the first in a new radio series presented by station WMAQ in the interest of human freedom. The spirit of Paul Revere, portrayed by Maurice D. Copeland, will return next week at this same time to narrate another chapter in the story which we call Destination Freedom. Today's script was written by Bill Hodapp and produced under the direction of John Cowan. Everett Clark was heard as the narrator. Others in the cast were Donald Gallagher, Arthur Peterson, Alma Plotz, and Jess Pugh. The special music was composed by Emil Soderstrom and played by Helen Morton and Jose Bethencourt. Our engineer was George Wilson. Sound effects by Cliff Mueller and Dave Squires. This is Charles Routmountain reminding you that the sound of the freedom bell is your invitation to follow Paul Revere along the road to Destination Freedom. October is Community Fund Month. Everybody benefits, everybody gives. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.